This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Well, good morning, all. Welcome to the House Taxation Committee. I'm glad to see everyone here. We've got a couple of bills this morning that we're going to take up, but we've got a few other things to do in the meantime. I'd also like to welcome everybody listening on the internet. Just as a reminder, cell phones and computers, you know the drill. And with that, I'll ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representative Chafee?
Present.
Duvall? Johnson Chris?
Here.
Johnson David? Mills? Olson?
Here.
Pitchke?
Here.
Randolph?
Here.
Reed?
Here.
Ring?
Here.
Smith?
Here.
Dennard?
Here.
Willitson?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right. Thank you. Just a reminder, that if you plan to testify for or against either of the bills that are up today, to please sign in. With that, I'd like to have our pages come up to the podium and introduce themselves.
Hello, my name is Madison Stroud. I go to McCook Central High School in Salem, South Dakota. I'm currently a junior. I hope to come back next year, and I'm hoping to go into the medical field.
Well, welcome, Madison. Thank you for your service. Can you believe you've only got one day left after today? Morning.
Good morning. My name is Maddie Brink. I'm from Brookings. I'm a junior. And I'm hoping to get an economics major and maybe a music minor and then go to law school.
Well, so then you'd be going to school in Vermilion.
Maybe.
That is a great answer.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your help this morning.
Thank you.
So if we've got any additional information to hand out, the pages are here and willing to help us. We've got a couple new committee members this year. Minority leader, Representative Jamie Smith. Welcome to the Tax Committee. We're glad to have you. And also Representative Tony Randolph. And welcome to the Tax Committee. We're glad to have you as well. We also have new staff from the LRC. And so I'd like to start by introducing our secretary, Nancy Begay. This is her first year as a secretary, so we're going to coach her along, but she'll do a great job. And could you tell us a little bit about yourself, Nancy?
Well, I'm born and raised in Pierre, and I just retired from the lottery after 29 years, and I thought this would be an interesting thing to try out, so... Good to be here.
All right. Thank you. Slide that over. And Michael, you're new here as well, and you've got quite a background.
Yes, I do. I am originally from Frankfurt, Germany, born and raised there. Came over to the United States when I was 18. I attended Southern Virginia University and received a Bachelor of Arts degree in business management there. And from there, I attended the University of Louisville Law School. And practiced law, graduated in 2008, passed the bar exam, practiced law primarily in bankruptcy for about a year, and then moved to Southern California to pursue a Master of Laws in Taxation. And after that year, while I was pursuing that degree, I learned that I scored high enough on the Kentucky bar to be licensed in Minnesota and North Dakota. So that led me to a private law firm in the Grand Forks, North Dakota area, where I practiced for 6.5 years. Among other things, I did tax law there. And then in 2016, I transitioned over to a public accounting firm and became a CPA during that time and was there for about 3 years. I've had this burning desire to do public service ever since I was in law school. I just haven't had the true opportunity to do so until this came around. So this is fulfilling a dream of mine, and I've really enjoyed my time here, and I'm very excited for the upcoming or this legislative session that we're in right now.
Well, thank you. I told you he had a varied background. And we're lucky to have you, so welcome to the tax committee. Let's see, we've got one intern, so I'm going to open the floor up to you if you'd like to come up and please introduce yourself.
I'm Avery Scott. We also have another intern over there. I don't know if he wanted me to call him out, but... I'm from Sioux Falls, but I go to school at Nebraska Wesleyan in Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm studying political science and economics.
All right. Well, thank you. And Jacob, you snuck in and I didn't even see you, so I apologize for missing you.
I'm Jacob Miller, originally from Sioux City. I go to the University of South Dakota studying political science and economics, and I'm a sophomore.
All right. Go Yotes. Thanks for your help. Any other personal privileges? That, all right, seeing none, let's get to work. We have two bills on the agenda, and we'll take them in order. The first one is House Bill 1019, an act to revise certain references to the Internal Revenue Code. This is an annual bill that we get every year. So with that, we'll open it to proponent testimony. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the House Tax Committee. My name is Rachel Williams, and I am here from the Department of Revenue to testify in favor of House Bill 1019, an act to revise certain references to the Internal Revenue Code. House Bill 1019 is our annual update to references to the Internal Revenue Code in our state law. This is something we are required to do annually to ensure that we are referring to the current version of the Internal Revenue Code in administering all of our tax statutes. There are several sections in Title 10 that reference the Internal Revenue Code, and this update updates all of them at one time. With that, Mr. Chair, I would ask that you have favorable consideration of House Bill 1019. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Williams. Any other proponent testimony for House Bill 1019? I don't think there would be anybody that would have a lot to say about this, but... Okay, seeing no other proponent testimony, is there any opponent testimony? Oh, that didn't just happen to you, did it?
No, it's not a cell phone.
Okay, seeing no opponent testimony, we'll close the testimony portion and ask for committee questions. Representative Chafee.
Would it please the board, can I make a motion or you want discussion?
We'll do the discussion stage if there is any. Anyone, any questions, anything? Okay, then we'll close that portion and open to committee action. Representative Chafee.
Do pass. Motion to do pass. House Bill 1019.
Okay, we have a motion do pass. A second by Representative Dennert. Comments on your motion, Representative Chafee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I gave it a lot of thought, deliberation, and studied this last night and thought this is the right move to do at this time.
Thank you for those very descriptive comments. Any other comments on the motion do pass for House Bill 1019? Seeing none, the motion is do pass on House Bill 1019 by Representative Chafee. And seconded by Representative Dennert, the Secretary will call the roll. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed say nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representative Chafee.
Aye.
Duvall.
Aye.
Johnson Chris.
Aye.
Johnson David.
Aye.
Mills.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Pitschke.
Aye.
Randolph.
Aye.
Reed.
Aye.
Ring.
Aye.
Smith. Dennert.
Aye.
Willardson.
Aye. With a unanimous decision, House Bill 1019 passes and will proceed to the floor at the option of the chair. Unless there's an objection, it will be placed on the consent calendar. Hearing no objections, it will proceed on the consent calendar. Brings us to our next bill, House Bill 1020, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the use of exemption certificates. We'll open to proponent testimony. Welcome again, Ms. Williams.
Again, my name is Rachel Williams, and I'm here from the Department of Revenue to testify in favor of House Bill 1020, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the use of exemption certificates. House Bill 1020 provides a good faith standard for obtaining exemption certificates, which will protect South Dakota buyers. Before I talk more about what House Bill 1020 does, I'd like to describe an exemption certificate and its use in the tax world. A buyer can provide an exemption certificate to any seller when the transaction should not be subject to tax. An example of this would be if the purchaser is planning to sell that product because they will charge tax to the end user. So a sale for resale is exempt, and an exemption certificate documents that exemption. A seller who holds any exemption certificate does not need to remit sales tax on the transactions that are covered by that certificate. They merely need to keep that certificate on file. That exemption certificate transfers any responsibility for the tax to the buyer who issued it. Sellers should keep their exemption certificates on file, but if they're not on file when they're visited by the Department of Revenue and asked for them, that seller has 120 days or 4 months to obtain exemption certificates that apply to sales they've made in the past. Now the question is, what does House Bill 1020 do? House Bill 1020 will add good faith standards for any exemption certificate that's obtained after the Department of Revenue comes in. So it does not apply to any exemption certificate that was on file at the date of sale, that the time the transaction happened. The good faith standards have long been a part of the streamlined sales tax agreement, and we would like to codify them into law so that we can require exemption certificates that are obtained after the fact to be statutorily available where and when the transaction took place, applicable to the item that is being purchased, and also reasonable for the buyer's type of business. The good faith standards will protect buyers because I'm going to give you a simple example. Let's say we have a Minnesota company that sells clothing. In Minnesota, clothing is not taxable. So that company might not even realize that they need to collect South Dakota tax when a South Dakota customer comes and purchases items from them. But when the Department of Revenue shows up and performs an audit and shows them how much tax is due on their South Dakota sales, they may say, oh, I need to go and see if these sales were exempt. And they will complete exemption certificates and provide them to their purchasers to sign. And sometimes the purchasers don't know what they're signing. Many of these exemption certificates may be valid. Maybe they sold those clothes to another clothing retailer that was going to sell them right here on Main Street in Pierce, South Dakota. And under these changes, those exemption certificates would all still be accepted. But if they sold an item to John Doe in Sioux Falls, who just bought one item that he was probably using himself, that exemption certificate would not be accepted, and we would still be able to collect the tax from the Minnesota company that it was due from. So these good faith standards, like I said, they don't change the protections for any seller who obtains exemption certificates at the date of sale. They're only going to protect buyers from sellers who are trying to get exemption certificates years later when the department asks for them. So please, support House Bill 1020 and protect South Dakota buyers. And I will stand by for any questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Williams. Any other proponent testimony for House Bill 1020? Any other proponents? Seeing none. Any opponents to House Bill 1020? Last call for opponents. All right. Seeing none. We'll close the testimony portion and open to committee questions. Chair. Representative Mills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question of Ms. Williams.
Okay, please proceed.
I find the examples very helpful to kind of inform me. Can you think of some other examples that you could share with us?
Ms. Williams.
Mr. Chair. Most of the examples are from out-of-state sellers. They either didn't know they were supposed to be collecting the tax, or they made assumptions about our taxpayers that aren't true based on their own laws. Every state has different laws, and we'll run into situations where a seller might assume that because someone is a teacher, they don't have to pay taxes. Now, schools don't pay taxes, but teachers do. Does that help you understand the example? So they will they'll fill out these forms, and many times, you know, a teacher might sign it because they've never seen it before and they don't know what this form is. And we want to protect them because I failed to mention that there's a 50% penalty with misuse of a resale certificate or exemption certificate that falls on any purchaser that signs a form that was not valid. So we want to make sure we're protecting purchasers from that as well.
Representative Mills?
Mr. Chair, is this particular change coming as a result of a specific incident that is very similar to what you just described to us? Or, I mean, oftentimes changes in the law are the result of some problem that was encountered, and I'm just curious if you're seeing a lot of this from Minnesota companies, border towns, that kind of thing.
Ms. Williams?
Mr. Chair, we aren't seeing any more of this than we usually do, but we do anticipate with the Wayfair decision and having more out-of-state businesses doing business in South Dakota and being required to collect tax that we may run into this more in the future.
Other questions of the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one question. Being a retail business owner, it seems like the emphasis here is, or let's say the impact is on the seller, and it could be interpreted by some retailers or sellers as the Department of Revenue depending on them to monitor some of these out-of-state people that are trying to take advantage of whatever opportunities they can here in South Dakota. And is the responsibility to produce that certificate? What happens if the seller cannot produce that certificate? Does that create some kind of a problem for the seller of that merchandise? And is the seller then responsible for paying the tax if they can't produce the certificate?
Well, I think there was a question there, but please proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So as I said, if a seller does not have a certificate and is not able to produce a certificate, we give them 120 days to either get a certificate or prove that the transaction should be otherwise exempt. So if the certificate is valid 120 days after we've asked for it, we absolutely would accept it. They can also contact their customer and say, hey, did you pay use tax? Because if that customer paid use tax and they show us the department that the tax was paid, there would be no liability for the seller either. And I hope that answers your question.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to make this one more clear so everybody can understand that it's a question. So how does this change existing law then with regard to that production of that certificate?
Ms. Williams?
So the only change here is that when, let's say, an auditor obtains or receives this certificate after they've requested it, they will look to make sure that the exemption was statutorily available where and when the transaction took place. And I emphasize the where, because if we're dealing with out-of-state sellers, sometimes they try to claim exemptions that are valid in their state but not ours. We also want to make sure that it's applicable to the item being purchased. So again, like we said, clothes aren't even taxed in Minnesota, but they are here for the end user. And we want to make sure that it's reasonable for that buyer's type of business. So in my example, I used an individual, but let's say a real estate agent is buying shirts. They're probably clothing their realtors or giving them away to their customers, and they would be the end user and owe tax. So the only changes there are that we can apply those good faith standards, those three tests, to ensure that the exemption certificate is valid.
Representative Johnson, does that help you out?
For the time being, thank you.
All right. Representative Chafee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the sponsor. Line 16. Within my own household, I struggle this definition with my wife. What is the definition of reasonable, and who's in charge of determining that?
Wife.
Mr. Wilt?
Ms. Williams.
That is an excellent question. So in this case, you know, it would be an auditor would look at whether they feel, as I gave an example, a real estate agent would be reselling shirts or not. You know, does it meet that business's definition? And we would do, or the business's mission, and we would do research looking at their website to try and make our determination. And then we would have a conversation with the seller. And if they really feel that it's reasonable, we would try to work out so that we're at the same decision. And if not, we do have a hearing process through the Department of Revenue to make sure that we are being reasonable in our interpretation of reasonable. Hope that
Representative Chafee, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're having the hearing within the Department of Revenue, or is it through an OHE judge? Or I'd like to think it's you're not judge and jury on the situation.
Mr. Chair, yes, we our hearing process goes through the Office of Hearing Examiners, which is a separate entity.
And after that, then it goes before a judge. Other questions of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pischke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'm just having a little bit of time following this. So in this situation where you say you have a realtor group in say they're in Sioux Falls, and they go across the border into Minnesota and they buy shirts for their realtor team, and they so they're not paying the tax over there, and they come back over and they give these shirts to their team, are you saying that there's some kind of the exception form is for that situation? Or please clarify. I'm not following yet.
Mr. Chair. Okay, great question. So your question was, if a realtor team in Sioux Falls goes over to Minnesota and purchases these items, does this apply? And it does not apply in that situation. Because if they physically are in Minnesota making the purchase, Minnesota's taxes apply. Now, when they bring the items back, there may be use tax due when they get back to South Dakota, but that seller is not responsible for getting an exemption certificate when somebody is physically in their state because their state's laws apply. This example applies for somebody making an online purchase or a mail order from a company in Minnesota or if Minnesota comes here to make that sale.
With the, it's where the product's delivered.
Correct. But if they have a third-party delivery, then it would still be...
Yep. Yep. Does that help, Representative Pischke?
For now.
Okay.
So plotting.
Representative Johnson, you have another thought.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. Thank you for answering our questions. And my question is, does this overlap at all into internet sales where the threshold would apply in certain circumstances?
Ms. Williams?
That's a great question. So if a seller meets our thresholds, then they are required to collect tax for that year. And that would be, yes, when the exemption certificates would come into play. And that might be a situation where they would get an exemption certificate after the fact, because if they didn't meet our thresholds earlier in the year, they might not have been collecting this information. So we would give them 120 days to collect any necessary exemptions.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in a circumstance where you are concerned about a business taking advantage of not paying tax in South Dakota that's due to internet sales, and the business owner has not sold more than $100,000 worth of product, and that particular buyer is underneath that $100,000 threshold, is there time involved with the seller to produce any kind of records in your anticipation to prove that they're under the $100,000 threshold to that particular or for that for their internet sales?
Ms. Williams.
That's a great question. So in our administration to date of the Wayfair decision, we have been going with businesses that have known sales over $100,000 and already meet our thresholds. We have not placed a burden on a smaller retailer that has not met our thresholds.
Thank you.
Hey. Keep in mind, the tax is still due. It's whether or not the department's going to chase it.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Okay.
you were addressing me on that comment, correct?
Well, the committee.
Okay.
On that.
So on internet sales, the tax wouldn't necessarily be due if you were under a threshold. Isn't that correct?
No, I don't believe that's correct. I'll have Ms. Williams correct me if I'm wrong. The tax is still due, but the department is not going to proceed on those instances, where it's under $100,000. It's just like prior to this, when we, with use tax, if I bought something over the internet, I collect stamps. So if I bought stamps from a dealer in New York and had them shipped to South Dakota, I owe use tax on that. But it was rarely ever paid. I mean, in the past, Governor Dugard and Representative Wick were the only two I know that would file use tax returns. Nobody else in the state did.
Two of us.
Okay, I opened a hornet's nest there. I did. So, Ms. Williams, is that correct?
Yes, you are correct. The question is not, was the tax due? It's who is it due from? So if that company does not meet our thresholds, they do not owe the tax. Their customer in South Dakota owes the tax.
Does that help, Representative Johnson?
Correct. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ring.
For a tax economist, this is great fun. let's say we've got somebody who's right at the $100,000 border, and they're not collecting the tax, and then they realize that they've exceeded the $100,000. Do they have to go back and collect the tax from that first $100,000 worth of sales, or is that still just the liability, the responsibility of the purchaser?
Ms. Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't say that I've seen that situation yet, so I can't tell you what we have done, but I can tell you that we have worked with every single taxpayer that has had an issue individually and worked together with them to find a solution that works for the department and the business. Because we don't want this to be an undue burden. We just want to create a fair playing field for all of the sellers in our state.
Does that help, Representative Ring?
It does, yeah.
Okay, very good.
I would just comment that I probably buy more items than most people from sellers that probably won't exceed the $100,000. I would guess that when I pay $5 for a paper for the National Bureau of Economic Research, there aren't that many other people there. What has surprised me is that I think every instance I've been, it's three or four maybe, they're collecting the tax already, even though I would guess that they could anticipate that they aren't really expected to, but they're collecting it, which I think is a very good sign. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we'll try to steer us back on course here. We're in the committee questioning phase on House Bill 1020. Any other questions? Representative Randolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of a question, a follow-up question to Representative Rings. And so you, as you said, you work with them, with sellers to create a reasonable way to get that taken care of. When it's all said and done, it's still owed. And I guess that's, I didn't form that in a question, but that is the question. When it's all said and done, whatever gets worked out, it's still owed by the seller, no matter what, correct?
Ms. Williams.
Correct. The seller does still owe the tax. In the situation of sales and use tax, though, we do always have two, or now after Wayfair, we have two people to collect from because the purchaser does owe use tax if it wasn't collected to begin with. But most of the time when we're working with a business, it might be a delayed implementation because their system just isn't ready yet, where we will work with them on interest and penalty and get them get their computers up to standards to comply with the department.
All right. Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Seeing none, we will close the questioning and open up to committee action.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chafee.
I move do pass.
We have a do pass motion from Representative Chafee, seconded by Representative Ring. Discussion on your motion. Representative Chafee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had quite a bit more discussion on this than I thought we would, which I actually learned quite a few things on that, so I appreciate the conversation. And encourage a vote yes on this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other discussion on the motion do pass? Okay. Seeing none. The motion is do pass on House Bill 1020, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the use of exemption certificates. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Representative Chafee?
Aye.
Duvall?
Aye.
Johnson Chris?
Nay.
Johnson David?
Aye.
Mills?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Pitschke?
Aye.
Randolph?
Aye.
Reed?
Aye.
Ring?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Dennert?
Aye.
Willardson?
Aye.
We have 12 yeas and one nay.
Okay, at a vote of 12-1, House Bill 1020 will proceed to the floor. I need to assign this to someone to carry. Representative Olson? Very good. So you'll carry it to the floor and also to the caucus, and I'm sure you...
We'll
all right, very, very good as well. That concludes our official business for today. I do have three other bills that have been assigned to our committee. I have not been able to get a hold of the sponsors of those yet, but I'm planning to hold a meeting then next Tuesday where we'll take up a couple of those bills. If that doesn't work out, you know, watch your notices and the announcements on the floor, you know, if we have to delay till next Thursday. So that's kind of where we're at. Is there anything else for the good of the committee? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Representative Chafee
second.
Has a motion to adjourn, seconded by Representative Ring. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.